Welcome to the Mumbrella Podcast. I'm Tim Burrows. Today, beer. Is Carlton's ad cock-up really what it seems? What do we think of the new Forex work? And does the beer economy work? Plus, 7, Home of the Hits and Diggers. Foxtel and Nine's Olympics tiff. The outdoor industry finally gets a currency. Does it take a digital boss to modernise an ad agency? Joining us in the studios of CBS Interactive, Scott Rohde from PR agency House Party.
Hey, Tim.
And Mumbrella deputy editor Camille Alicon.
Hello.
Lots to cover today. First, beer.
Rohde, it's drinks break. Come on, Digger. Take a load off. Come here, mate. Boy.
Hey, Red, picture's fuzzy. Rev it up a bit, mate.
So, BMF have unveiled their latest work for Forex. It's called Beach Shack. Camille, what do you think?
Not a fan, to be honest with you, but also because I'm not a big fan of Forex full stop. I don't really know anyone outside of Queensland who drinks it. I don't actually know anyone in Queensland,
really.
I don't
think you can blame the advertising agency for that, though.
No. But obviously, are they trying to broaden their audience?
It's
no.
Worth probably explaining for those who haven't seen the ad, the idea or ideas behind
it. It's basically just a bunch of mates, and they've carried on this theme for a little while, just mucking about and doing stupid things together and patting each other on themselves on the back for their stupidity, I suppose.
That's a very, very harsh interpretation.
I went for ingenuity more so with the ads, kind of give that kind of, you know, that they're willing to improvise, adapt and overcome to situations just to enjoy the beer and their time with their friends.
Yes, getting the dog to run on the treadmill to power the television, for
yeah,
instance.
Yeah, and using the wheelbarrow to fry the fish type thing. You
yes.
Know? Yeah. It's just blokes having fun. But
I actually
honest,
do know somebody, by the way, who is from Queensland, as it happens, who does walk her dog on a treadmill.
It does have a very, I suppose, some people would use the word Bergen. I'm not using the word Bergen, but
oh,
it does
come
have
on.
A very...
You are using the word.
You really are.
You're not using it, but you're certainly heavily implying it.
Well, that may be the case then. And perhaps if we're talking about blokey humour in beer ads, you know, let's talk about, you know, another ad campaign that's just launched, Tui's New.
Yeah, well, before we move on to that one, let's just get a hit and miss on this. Hit or miss.
What do you think, Tim?
Well, come on, hit or miss?
Miss.
Scott. I think personally it's a miss, but for its target audience, it's a hit.
I'm going to give it a hit, so it loses again, and I'm on the losing side again. Anyway, you were mentioning Tui's, Camille.
Tui's New Beer Economy. It's a new ad campaign for the brand.
So the idea is that every favour can be priced in cases of beer.
Helping a mate fix a leak. One case. Helping a mate take a leak. 10 cases. Tui's New, official currency of the beer economy.
So there's a few creatives, and it is the same blokey humour, and this one resonates with me the way Forex doesn't, and, you know, not really sure why, but you know, this is definitely a hit for me before you even ask the question. One my favourite execution actually is, so there's scenarios of mates doing things for each other and what that task would be and how much you would give them in terms of a case of beer. One that I really like is when helping a mate fix a leak, one case, and then you see with the mate falling off the ladder.
Two cases.
Well, actually 10 cases because helping a mate take a leak.
Because
a guy falls off the ladder.
Now, Scott, beer economy, work for
you? Yeah, it's worked for me all my life, to be perfectly honest. you know, it's one of those things that me and other guys have always done. It's one of those, you know, if you do a favour for a friend, you get rewarded by a case of beer. But the way we work it isn't the same as Tui's, I'm afraid to say. We work it in grades of beer. So a really big favour gets you a case of Hoegaarden. Normal favour gets you a case of Carlton, you know, or Tui's.
So where does Red Stripe come in there?
Red Stripe never comes into it.
Really? That's disappointing.
But Tui's Platinum, then that's also a nice premium beer that I'm a big fan of.
But despite those beer ads, that one by Saatchi & Saatchi, by the way, the bigger debate on the pages of Mumbrella this week has been over an ad that didn't run for Carlton. Now, there are a lot of conspiracy theories.
Trouble Brewing, welcome to the Rumour Farm.
Morning, Ross. Rumour has it that Australia's biggest brewing company has just expended over $2.5 million producing a new campaign to invigorate one of its major brands. Our extravaganza is unlikely to be aired because at the last minute it was unilaterally canned at the highest level within the company and causing a great deal of consternation. However, pop up on YouTube, there for the audience along the way, and rumour has it that it will be worth seeing.
Camille, cock up or hoax?
Well, I would say at this stage, cock up, I don't know if that's the right word for it, but I would say it's not a hoax.
Now, one of the problems of recording a podcast, of course, is that it's very easy to be proved wrong by the time one puts it to air, but it's worth explaining where we're at with this one, isn't it?
Well, basically last week, Carlton and United Breweries, part of Foster's group, was going to unveil to the media, to the trade press, their new big ad campaign or big marketing campaign for Carlton Draft.
And that tends to be quite spectacular sometimes.
Yeah, so I think
it?
The big ad, Flashdance in previous years,
Sky Troopers,
2008.
Which is a bit more disappointing. But...
Okay, personal opinion. And basically they were supposed to unveil that last week, and in the last minute they cancelled the briefing. Now, this week they pushed ahead, they put a press release out, pushed ahead with an on-pack promo, a mystery prize worth $200,000, and they said to be confirmed in terms of the unveiling of the big TV ad. So Tim and I, being, you know, a skeptical journalist, thought, what's going on here? And went back to Carlton Draft and asked what happened.
Yeah, because it's clearly there's a story involved in, you know, why might an ad suddenly be pulled at the last minute. But the suspicious thing is, normally it's the last thing that a marketer would volunteer, that basically they've cocked up and not hit the deadline.
The other thing that makes me a bit curious, you know, putting my old journalist hat on, is the fact that it's actually called Trouble Brewing.
Yes, well, this was the... this was the tipster who rang up the radio station with the... calling himself Trouble Brewing.
Exactly.
Saying, it's going to end up on YouTube. And it sounded a bit scripted, didn't
it? Yeah, when somebody calls himself Trouble Brewing, it makes me go,
Yeah, so I get the feeling that we don't know the whole story, and maybe we never will, but...
Yeah. I mean, Carlton Draft, or internally from CUB, they said to me that, look, this is not a PR stunt. We had nothing to do with it personally as a company. That's just not how we work. And we wouldn't lie to you. We don't treat media in that way. So, i.e., when she told me before that conversation that it had been pulled just because it went too far and we're going back to the drawing board, she said to me that was the truth. Now, since then, since that conversation, we heard about the 3AW radio interview. And I went back to them and said, look, this sounds a bit dodgy. It sounds a bit fishy. People are saying this is a PR stunt, a hoax. And they said to me, no, it's not. Now, whether or not someone associated to their campaign decided off their own bat to go off and speak to 3AW, potentially, it could have been one of the agencies, potentially. We don't know. Obviously, they've signed their life away. They're not supposed to.
Yes, but equally, over the next few days, I'll be going onto YouTube regularly and typing in the keywords Carlton banned beer ad to see what comes up, to see if it does creep up there at some point. Of course, not the first time that hoaxes on trade press have been done. There was one in New Zealand about a year and a half ago as a stunt to launch Mad Men, where the agency pretended that the two creative directors... senior members of the creative team had stormed out to start their own agency. Now, that one, I was the editor of B&T at the time, and I wasn't that amused by being hoaxed. So I banned the agency from the pages of the magazine for a year.
You don't hoax the media.
Yeah, you get to do it once. Yeah. So it was my view was, okay, well, I can't trust anything that comes from me anymore. So exactly. For a year, we didn't write about them at all.
Mm. And who was that, Tim?
Well, it sort of seems a bit unfair now because it's a different management. Mm-hmm. So, you know,
fair enough.
Water under the bridge and all of that sort of thing. But yeah, or equally, you know, Naked caught some of the backlash with the witchery hoax, you know, this time last year with the Heidi looking for the man of her dreams on YouTube, you know, and again, you know, they caught backlash from journalism.
They took hell for that one.
So what would your PR advice be? Are there times where it's worth having a bit of being a bit playful with the media?
Well, I think you can be playful, but I think as long as you let them know it's a hoax, and a lot of times you speak to the media and say, like, this is a hoax, but this is what we're planning on doing, then they usually get involved in it. You know, they're more than happy to do that kind of stuff, rather than, you know, if you fool them, then it's going to come back and bite you in the arse at some point. And these are people that you have to deal with for a variety of clients. So, you know, why would you piss them off for one client when you've got to go speak to them the next week for another client?
On to television now. Big moves in the financial markets this week with the merger of the Seven Network and Westrack Holdings, the common thread being businessman
Kerry Stokes. Now, Camille, what, if anything, is the significance?
Well, I mean, it will allow them, obviously, to allow Stokes to pursue more media deals. So at the moment, potentially, James Packer's Consolidated Media Holdings.
Which he already has a small investment in.
A 22% stake. And which also owns a 25% stake into Foxtel.
Now, and of course, WesTrac being, Caterpillar Diggers, amongst other things.
Resource machinery company.
That Kerry Stokes also already had an investment in. And some of it makes sense just because that had quite a big pile of debt, while Seven had a big pile of money. So you put the two together and, you know, then there's better use of capital. I love the fact that you've now got a company that does television and diggers. It's just kind of... funny. It's the point we made at the time is Scott, do you watch 30 Rock?
I do watch 30 Rock religiously.
Well, of course.
Call me the Bishop of 30 Rock.
Well, Jack Donaghy, boss, is head of East Coast Television and Microwave Programming.
Yes, so he likes to combine them on occasion.
Yes, and similar opportunities for Seven, I think, now. Now, still television. Now, there was also a splendid tiff in the last few days between Foxtel and Nine over the Winter Olympics, which we chortled as soon as the press release dropped in the office.
Frosty relations, Tim, yes, between Nine and Foxtel.
So explain what happened.
Well, basically... it was quite exciting. Australia had its first gold medal winner, snowboarder Tora Bright, last week.
Yes, very goody-goody two-shoes, but that's a different matter.
Okay. So Foxtel straight away sent out a press release saying, we broadcast the live coverage of the history-making awards ceremony for Tora, while Channel 9 was off... and an ad break for Woolworths.
Well, their calamity coverage continued, I think.
Yes, the headline was Channel 9's Winter Olympic Games Calamity Continues. And basically it just said that while they were broadcasting the history-making ceremony, it was an ad. They decided to cut to an ad in Channel 9 and basically then pretended that Ken Sutcliffe then pretended that they cut to the live coverage when it wasn't.
Also, Foxtel alleged.
So they alleged.
Minutes later, though, the new twist, when the counter press release arrived from Nine, and our chuckling increased some more, whereas they were saying it wasn't quite like that.
Well, they said it was to quote, erroneous and inflammatory. Basically, there was even a quote, apparently, from Foxtel CEO Kim Williams apologising to Channel 9 CEO David Gingell. Regarding the content of the Foxtel release. So this was very quick. I'm thinking, what's happening here in the background? Were there phone calls made as soon as that press release was sent out?
It must have been just calls to the big boys straight away.
Yeah, no, good PR. I mean, what's your take, Scott? How does something like this happen where...
some maniac. No, I think obviously they've wanted to try and one-up them so that they can try and get the media on their side the next day, try and get some good cover, get people to say, well, you know, we should be with them. And then they've realised that it's not the ceremony, and that was the next day, just the flower giving. And, you know, the attack, not necessary, I don't think, in this situation.
There are times, though, when you can issue a press release attacking a competitor.
Absolutely, yeah, you can. I mean, you can, and a lot of companies do. But in this case, yeah, it's a stupid manoeuvre.
It wasn't very appropriate, was it, given that they jointly bid for it?
Yes, that's the issue, and they've also got to do the 2012 London Olympics together as well. So it doesn't help relations. Although the sense maybe was, I mean, they weren't talking about it, but we sort of picked up the sense that perhaps it was done at a relatively junior is perhaps the wrong word, but non-senior level at Foxtel, that original press release.
What was the time difference from the first one to the second one?
Or minutes?
Well, in that case, maybe
minutes.
Well.
I don't know, it's less than an hour, wasn't it?
It was probably within half an hour.
Maybe it's possible that it didn't get...
Tell me, if not minutes, it's less than an hour. Let's just get the definition of Camille's time span.
Let's just confirm this, okay?
All right, calm it down, people. Back off. Separate you both of you.
When you say minutes, it sounds like up to 10 minutes. It sounds within minutes.
I see, I didn't realise there was a sliding scale of minutes.
There is in my head. In the Camille head, there is a sliding scale.
Yeah, so what might have happened was, you know, it might not get signed off, and sent out by accident, and then they've ran up to management and went, bollocks, what have we done? And then that's why the second release has been written and sent out quite quickly. Because I know within an hour is a quick time to turn around.
Yeah, if any insiders would like to let us know, then please feel free. On to outdoor.
Globally, there's been an evolution in the measurement of outdoor media, and Australia is the latest market to benefit. The Move system is a world first in that it covers all the major advertising formats. A number of experts and an enormous amount of work were dedicated to building Move. Some highly esteemed industry leaders, including Simon Cooper and Paul Barber of the UK, joined our own Australian experts in developing the Move system.
Now, it's been a big week in outdoor. New currency Move finally launched. Now, it's all about being able to guesstimate how many people are likely to see any given outdoor poster. And I gather there's like 60,000 of them just in the metro.
I like the
cities.
Little video they've got. It's quite fun.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, which is, funnily enough, although it looks very good and looks very appropriate, actually repurposed from another market and re-edited.
Oh,
all right.
Yes, that's the little secret.
In that case, I'm disappointed now.
Yeah, now, that was the launch, and it's pretty complicated, but I guess a buying currency is and a planning currency is something that outdoor needs, Camille, I guess.
I mean, this is the first of its kind around the world, isn't it, really? It's quite a landmark.
Yeah, certainly they would make the case for its scope, the level of detail, and the fact that it covers all of the major formats, outdoor, public transport, approaches to retail. So it's far more comprehensive.
Yeah, because the UK probably is the closest thing to industry-wide.
Yeah, and the UK are working on something similar, a lot more sites and panels, and they actually were due to have something up and running by the end of next month, I think it was, which they're going to miss that deadline massively. You know, so Move missed some deadlines as well, but that, you know, that's partly because it is so complicated.
Yeah.
You know, I sort of feel bad because I can't do justice to the launch in this sort of 1 or 2 minute conversation, which, you know, I was kind of there at the briefing, and John Grono kind of talked the audience through what they'd actually done.
Mm-hmm. It was a quick summary, Tom.
Yeah, in three bullet points. First stage is there's an enormous amount of data that has been done for the government about transport. So there's a lot of knowledge about each individual area of each individual city and how people get from one place to another, how many of them might be going on each different route, each different form of transport every single day. So from that, you can start to plot how many people might pass any single spot.
So you extrapolate data and then...
That's the first part. The second part is then plotting every single poster space, what direction it's looking in, so what percentage people are likely to see it as they go past.
So we're still guessing here.
So we're still guessing. And then the third part is then getting people to wear special glasses, little cameras, one pointing forwards, one pointing at their eyes, to work out what they actually see in any given street, so they get a sense of likelihood to see. Now, one of the things that they're trying to make about this currency is that the measure is a score not for opportunity to see, which is a bit more general, but likelihood to see.
Okay.
Now, it's not actually saying this is... this poster will be seen by, you know, 1.2 million people. It's saying it's got an LTS score of 1.2 million likelihood to see over a month, say.
Do you know what? It's a better scoring system than the whole vagueness that usually sits around that in advertising.
Well, and the other thing, of course, is at least it then gives you something comparative between different poster sites.
Yeah,
good luck to them.
And you can get into conversations about reach and frequency and all of those things. So, yeah, I was pretty impressed.
I wonder how they rate buses, advertising on buses then.
Well, funnily enough, they actually featured that in the presentation. Yeah. So you'll get a different likelihood on whether... If it's a three-lane highway and the bus is generally on the left-hand side and the poster is on the left, then they'll statistically only people to its left will see it. If it's on the if there are five lanes to the right and people look coming towards it, then they'll score. If it's the back of the bus, then again that will have a different score again. So they've put a fair bit of science to it. You know, it's never going to be perfect. Yeah. It's like, you know,
did they bring traffic jams into the equation?
No, except of course, because it's an average across time.
Yep.
So, so all of those things average out across time. Now, the next issues, I guess, are seasonality, which they were asked about, but, that's not in there yet, but we'll be in time and weekends versus weekdays.
Sorry, I slipped into journalist mode there, sorry.
And I suppose the main thing is that they're hoping that this will grow their share of the ad pie. from 4 to 6%. I mean, you've been to the briefings. Do you think this is likely to happen sooner rather than later, or it's going to happen?
It's a big ask, particularly when online grows its share all the time, you know, at the expense of all of the media, the other mediums. People hate me using the word mediums, but I'm more comfortable with it.
You can't use the word mediums unless you can channel the dead.
Well, I know people say that, but I tend to find that it's only pedants who say that, though. So I went fishing and I caught me a pedant.
Is it another word that we've now used, like impactful, that's become a word to mean something when it really didn't exist?
I wasn't aware that impactful wasn't a word.
Well, I'm pretty sure it's not a word. Maybe it is now.
Going straight back to the dictionary when I get back to the office.
Did you guys even argue in the office before we came here
yes,
today?
Yes, we probably should have had this argument before we got out of the office, so we didn't have to do it now. But the other opportunity, of course, is it gives the individual media owners a chance to sell their own stories. So kind of somewhat terrifyingly this week, I found myself up on the roof of Glebe Island Silos, which is that giant poster site as you cross the Anzac Bridge in Sydney, looking at Eye's giant poster, which, you know, you don't realise how big it is until you're up there, and that message takes you 3 minutes to walk from one end to the
really?
Other of it. Yeah.
Wow, that's a long message.
So it's stunning. It was interesting also discovering who in the trade press have fears of heights more than other people as well. Big moves for outdoor. Changing the subject again, onto the brand shop and the future shapes of agencies, I guess. Now, this week we've seen Peter Bray step up to general manager of the brand shop. Now, that's significant because it's the first time, certainly, that I can think of that a digital person has taken the helm of a traditional agency. Peter Bray, by the way, a little advert here, is on the panel for the next Mumbrella Question Time, which is Thursday, March the 4th. Now, it's probably worth firstly just talking about the brand shop because they're a Sydney-based agency owned by STW. What are they best known for?
Well, the first one that comes to mind is the Kotex Beaver ad.
Yes, that was quite controversial. Gosh, 18 months, 2 years ago, I suppose.
Yeah, a year and a half.
Was that the one to shave the beaver?
It was, no, there was no shaving
of the
beaver.
That was the online one in the US, wasn't it, to shave the beaver?
Yeah.
Don't ask me to explain the ad. You guys go with it if you want to.
Yes, and more recently, they've launched new work recently, which you've written about
they have.
As well.
And, I mean, other clients they've worked for, The Australian, their Think Again ads, and Weet-Bix, Valvoline, you know, with doors.
Yes, Valvoline. Go on, do the impression.
What, me?
Yes.
No.
When you go, Tim. It's all yours.
No, I'm not going to.
I'm not going
to channel John Laws. I'm sorry.
Oh, well, I'm not channeling anyone right now.
Anyway, Valvoline.
And then the Are You OK?
You know what we're talking about. Yes, yeah, so that's what they're best known for. Now, Scott, it almost seems like we talk about agency structure every other week.
Well, that's a big topic at the moment.
Yeah, but I guess this idea that, you know, is it true? Do you think that the only way of getting a traditional agency to really get its head around digital is you've got to have a digital person bossing the whole agency?
No, I don't think so. But I think this is a good step forward because at least you'll be able to aid them in thinking that way and not just from a traditional point of view. And there's a lot of people that work in traditional agencies already have their head wrapped around digital, but you know, I suppose the majority don't. And having someone at the head like this will be, I mean, very beneficial to them, I think, because at least you'll be able to take them to the new level. But, you know, it depends on how good he is, let's be honest here.
Yeah, that's the big challenge.
Yeah.
Still with digital. Now, Nick Howe, former editor of Time Out and Fairfax's supplement/magazine Sport and Style, is back. He returned this week. He launched Buck, which targets men. This time around, though, it's online. So there's a blog which is already up and running, and then alongside that, twice a year, there'll be an online digital edition, you know, more sort of magazine-y in format. Now, I guess, Scott, is that a signal of changes in the way that you reach a male audience? You know, can you actually get mass reach online in the men's market?
Oh, absolutely, I believe so. I mean, Ask Men in the US and in Australia have been highly successful in reaching that kind of male audience that enjoy the... not the Zoo type of reader, but probably your more, maybe your partly GQ, partly FHM type reader.
Slightly more upmarket, likely to buy watches and moisturiser and all of those things that would be potential advertisers.
Yeah, the kind of guys that, you know, want to get laid a lot and then try and make yourself look nice by following what it says in the online market. I think, look, I like the name, Buck, you know.
It was a good name. I mean, I noticed from the sort of URLs around it, some of the best URLs were gone, so I think it's... online it's something like Buck Up or something like
but,
that.
But I mean, Buck's a good one because, you know, obviously it rhymes with a certain word which is useful if you want to do some fun stuff with it.
It's very masculine sounding.
Yeah, it's
too.
Very, you know, Fox Nights.
It's a I'm a man kind of brand sound.
Yeah. It is, yes. Now, I guess it's yet another challenge for men's magazines in print, really, which haven't been going terribly well.
Yeah, no, the last circulation, we did see some drops among the men's titles, especially Alpha.
Yes, down 30%.
30%.
Was the worst faller in the ABC numbers, if I remember rightly. I suppose one issue with that is, one sort of caveat, is that's news magazines. And rather oddly, it was originally distributed, you got it not free, because I had to be careful on the terminology, but when you bought the Telegraph, you got it at a discount or something like that. So it was very closely tied in with news. And they've changed that means of distribution, and it very much annoyed news agents who threatened to boycott it. And then lo and behold, that 30% down suggests that perhaps that came through. But yeah, I mean, do you think men's mags have hit a high watermark now for circulation?
I think more guys are spending time online rather than buying magazines. I mean, I buy a lot less than what I used to, I've got to be honest.
I'm the same.
And I think that, you know, a lot of the younger generation don't really buy them as much either. I think they're getting most of their information online.
Well, as usual, we managed to come to the death of print before we got to the end of the podcast.
I feel bad. I'm really sorry, print.
Anyway, that's all we have time for today. More next week, or follow our adventures at mumbrella.com.au. My thanks to Mumbrella's Camille Alacon and House Party's Scott Rohde.
Thanks, Tim.
And to CBS Interactive for their studio facility. I'm Tim Burrows, and that was the Mumbrella Podcast.